If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the divine love and light of the one supreme truth, the one that lives within us as our authentic being and identity. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. This evening, our seminar topic is the root cause of violence and its antidote, self-awareness, self-satisfaction, and self-fulfillment. So if you're ready, take a deep breath and call yourself forward into active soul awareness. Connect with that divine essential self very easily with your breath and your intention. Let's do it again. Take a deep breath and evoke, call forward, and bring into your body, into your mind, into your feelings, right down into the bottoms of your feet and beyond your divine golden essence. As a self-aware, eternally pure and divine being. And we ask at this time that the Lord God that dwells within us, right under our nose, in the center of our heart, in the center of our mind, as awakened awareness, and courses through our bodies as intelligent activity that is in alignment with divine presence and purpose. We ask that that be brought forward for each listener, according to the very highest good for each one. We ask that anything that could be cleared through grace at this time be dissolved back into the love that is the only truth, the only eternal verity, that which upholds all things in existence, now and forevermore. So, they've given me a difficult thing to talk about tonight, so I'm going to dive right in. All the problems that we have today in every area of our life is because we've forgotten how to be who we are. We've forgotten that our nature is blissful, is ever content and ever free, ever clear, omnipresent, all-knowing, and all-pervasive. We've simply forgotten that entirely. Instead, we've become entrained with the belief that we are exactly the opposite of that, that we're struggling, broken, flawed individuals trying to eke out a meager existence positioned between a birth and a death, which very many people hope will end the whole suffering saga. And yet none of that is true. It's all a big fabrication that we have built up into a false self that parades as if it knew what was going on, as if it were the sole decider of one's lot in life. So our whole sense of personal value has been hijacked by identifying ourselves with the thoughts and ideologies of others. Very few people know who they are or what they really authentically believe. Not even believe, but that which transcends belief, the awareness that is clarity of knowing itself. So when you don't value your own life, you will certainly not value the lives of others. When you don't love and appreciate yourself, or see your own worth and your own beauty and your own contributions, you're not going to see those in others or value them. So the process that we have today is that we have built a log jam, as it were, in the mental body, which for many people has cut them off from having the ability to connect consciously with their higher principles, with the high self, with the soul, with the spiritual essential self. And we could say, probably very simplistically, that the root cause of evil, of violence, of mayhem and terrorism is simply the lack of connection with one's essential soulific self. This self has been smothered in the beliefs, the thought forms, the ideologies, the reality constructs that have been created really, truly, by all of us through countless lifetimes within every culture, every creed, every race, every continent, every skin color, and every persuasion of consciousness. So our outer relationships simply mirror our relationship with ourselves. You can't be kind and caring to another if you hate yourself and find no value or satisfaction in your life. So it's a very necessary but hard lesson to learn that you alone are responsible for how your life turns out. One's day-to-day thoughts, habits, actions are designing the future and taking each one of us in a very specific destination. So every thought, every action is either contributing to our ascent or our decline. And it's one or the other with no exceptions. So living mindfully means consciously choosing to host only those thoughts, attitudes, and habits that lend quality to our life and contribute to our well-being and hence the well-being of the collective in which we share life. So when you take care of yourself in that way, you are in a position to assist others in caring for themselves who may not be in a position to do that for themselves. So it's a well-nourished soul that can be a source of nourishment for countless others. But the fuel that nourishes us is tapped by maintaining conscious connection with the power of our essential self, which we could call the soul. So it's only unhappy people who are out of touch with themselves, with their own sense of personal worthwhileness and value, that would ever derive a fiendish delight in torturing and destroying and killing. And such ones have no contact with their soul or their higher divine principles. So as I've spoken of before, there are two major pathways that govern life. One is the path of the lower egoic mind, which is the pursuit of power, control, and domination. And the force of the soul, which is motivated by love, and service. Now, souls have free choice down here in these dualistic universes. They can choose the path of power or the path of love. The path of self-service in the lower sense, or the service of others. And there are souls that have gone only on the path of power to the point that they have become masters on that line that we would call the line of the dark forces, which of course would be the polar opposite of the Lords of Light. The Lords of Light, who have chosen the way of the higher nature, the soul, who are walking the path of service to all life and love, they also stand in their own camp. Now, the battles which result in battles on the physical plane actually are alluded to in the ancient scriptures as the battles in heaven, which really weren't battles in heaven, but more specifically, battles that ranged upon the astral plane, which I've said before is the plane of the grand illusion of the separated self, the glamour of separate identity, which would be in the realm of the self-seeking and the self-serving. I'm talking about the lower levels of the astral plane. So that ancient battle started, in terms of our present root race, in ancient Atlantis, our present globe, let's say, with its many root races, and precipitated finally down into the physical plane, when some truly evil personalities that had no contact with their higher nature became the hosts for these forces, which will remain unnamed. You know them well from your own history books. And through those evil individualities were able to poison entire nations with their rhetoric and fuel turned out to be the First and the Second World Wars. We are entering a time now preparatory to the moving beyond the past timeline momentums that have replicated again and again and again, where we don't seem to be collectively getting the message that we're responsible for what happens on the planet, that man was given stewardship and free will to have at it, to choose how they would exercise their free will. That is why the soul is allowed to enter into all kinds of experience, but eventually it comes to a place where it makes a major choice of the direction it's going to pursue. By their fruits, you can know them. The fruit of the divine spirit is love, peace, kindness, goodness, humility, tolerance, patience, loyalty, and self-control. The fruit of those who have chosen to pursue the path of the ego, the lower mind, is power, control, manipulation, domination, subjugation, suppression, oppression, tyranny, torture, terrorism, everything that causes harm. By their fruit, you shall know them. You can tell a person's nature. by the words that come out of the mouth, which reveal the content of the heart. The heart unconsecrated, unawakened to the divine presence, is an abode of evil. Sai Baba has said that the one thing that God does not possess is the human heart, which must of its own free will be opened to the divine presence. So this causes us as light workers to be in a position where we truly are the vanguard of transformation on this planet, because it's only soul-aware individuals that can activate and fuel positive transformation in society. We who are the awakened, soul-conscious, soul-connected people in any given nation form the soul of that nation, and I would say the salvation of that nation. They're found everywhere, in every nation, in every stage of life. But sometimes the nations that they've incarnated in are so possessed and obsessed with an ancient and unworkable, impractical ideology that the freedom of the individual is totally suppressed and they're smothered and the ability to live as they would like to live, openly and freely. So they have to work quietly. They have to work within themselves, maintaining that higher awareness while actively, outwardly, blending in as best they can without playing false to their own sense of being. So what's the solution then? You are the solution by your getting in touch with your own essential spiritual nature and living a life that is fulfilling and satisfying and meaningful to you. And to do that requires your learning to think for yourself. We must accept sole responsibility for our own state of consciousness, our own happiness, our own fulfillment, and to do whatever is necessary to, above all else, be true to that. So if you look closely at what is going on in just about every unhappy person's life, and this would include nations as well, is the expectation that someone else will do for them what they are unwilling to do for themselves, which is take their own life in their own hands as a collective and have the courage to break free of oppression. There are nations that have done that. You don't have to kill and fight to do that. But you do have to stand collectively in solidarity with the right to your own freedom. And yet, most will tend to cast both blame and responsibility on to the shoulders of another. In general, people usually blame their governments and expect their leaders to take care of them or their social systems. Others spend time projecting outer villains, the secret government, the Illuminati, the reptilian shapeshifters, the Antichrist, so forth and so on. There's a million and one different projected villains out there, which people use as an excuse for accepting the responsibility for being true to their own selves. Now, alone you can't do all that much outwardly. But if we in the collective are the salt and the light on this earth, as Jesus has told us. If we are the healthy cells in a corporate body where disease is trying to take over, if we vivify that health that we have in that vivifying connection with our authentic true selves and keep fueling our lives in harmony with that, speaking where we can speak, teaching where we can teach, illumining where we can illumine, being the way showers, we rise up as the predominant transformative force within our nation, our community, and our planet. So every period of history has had its own intrigues, conspiracies, and protesters, its own version of the Antichrist. And yet, after thousands of years, the same exact patterns keep being repeated. Current humanity on planet Earth, individualized, became self-conscious 18.5 million years ago, according to the wisdom teachings. We've had that long to figure this out. And yet the name and blame projections continue each generation. Looks to an outer solution to save them. So what is necessary is each one learning how to think clearly and intelligently and to discriminate as to which course of action is the right one to take for the highest good of all. And a wise person foresees the outcome before acting and how that outcome will affect others. So our educational systems should teach children how to think and how to arrive at their own conclusions and solutions to problems. If you would position a child, a young child, before a global problem and ask them how they would solve it, I bet they would come up with something better than our politicians, because they haven't yet been so conditioned as we get when we get older. But instead, their heads are filled with the thoughts of others, which then they're taught to accept as fact, memorize, and regurgitate in their tests. The Tibetan and Jewish methods of lively debating and inquiry at least teaches their youth how to question and delve deeply into finding their own answers to life's dilemmas and mysteries and problems. And that said, we must go beyond the fixed ideologies of current religious belief systems, too. No matter how wise the ancients were, what was then, in previous times and centuries, was then appropriate for those times and those people and that level of consciousness. But this is now, today. Did you ever consider that you may have been one of those ancient philosophers or a Vedic Rishi thousands of years ago? So what about you today? How has your awareness grown and expanded? You cannot imagine how high some of those great, great ancient beings are today. Buddha, Jesus, Moses, Muhammad. Great, great, great. You can't even imagine the level of evolution that they hold today compared to where they were then. Some of them have gone on to Sirius, which is one of the seven paths open before a master, where the evolution is so quantumly enhanced. You can't even imagine how great they are today. But no, we hold them back to what they taught then and there. Do you know you can connect with those beings now? There is no distance between you and them. They're not limited by time and space. Why don't you hang out with Buddha or Krishna or Muhammad or Moses as who they are today? As who they are today. Oh, you'll probably connect with one of their disciples. Because that's how it works. But it doesn't matter. You're still touching into that great and glorious line of energy. So likewise, we take the teachings that were given 2, 3, 4, 5, 10,000 years ago in some cases, and try to apply it today, and it doesn't quite come into sync because we have a different time, a different series of rays governing this particular civilization and root race. And as souls, we come in to learn a different lesson than back then. For example, the remnants of Atlantis that barely survived were traumatized and pretty well closed down in terms of their higher understanding, were the ones that Jesus taught in Galilee. And he couldn't say very much to them because of their very traumatized and lower state of consciousness. And he said, I have other things to teach you, but you could not bear them now. But that same individuality is present today, and you can talk to him today. His current body, I understand, is close to 700 years old. I'm speaking about Jesus. And he can tell you a great deal about what it is to transcend this world and live a transcendental life completely one with the Father or the monad. The Father is another term for the I Am presence or the monad, spirit. So we try to enforce the past on the present and it doesn't work. That's why so many teachers today are emphasizing here and now. What's going on with you here and now? Forget the past. Quit trying to replicate a lesson that you've outgrown in the past and previous incarnations. You can tap into your innate wellspring, your chalice, your permanent atoms of wisdom right now that you've carried over because you're always greater today than you were in the past. That may be depressing to some of you because you've never looked beyond what's in the mirror to see who you truly are. If you could see who you truly are, you would be like Ramakrishna. You would fall before your own image in adoration. Not in a vainglorious way, but because all you could see was the beloved, the divine. Do you realize that the very cognitive power that allows you to understand what I'm saying right now is God in your mind? That the power of cognition, recognition, realization, and revelation is God in your mind. That's why in the Course of Miracles, one of the lessons is, God is in my mind. My mind is very holy. Have you made room to host holiness in your mind? Do you know that holiness can only perceive holiness? That purity can only perceive purity? That divinity can only perceive divinity? That means the mind has become so pure of the infection of worldly thought and beliefs, ideologies, and limitations, that it sees life as it truly is, devoid of egoic filters. I experienced that myself by doing some Buddhist meditations that gave me an experience of spacious clarity, where I was able to rise like a helium balloon above that asteroid belt of conditioning thought forms. I was able to break through into the clear light of pure, spacious awareness. The Buddhists really have that down very, very well. In fact, the Tibetan master said that the clearest and purest religion on the planet today, I'm quoting Joel Kuhl, was esoteric Buddhism. I don't know why. I haven't studied it extensively, so I can't speak about it. But the little that I have and the few techniques that I have explored certainly got me to a new level of clarity within myself. So the masters, you see, can be servitors of the dark or servitors of the light. We have a good image of that with Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker and the battles of Orion, which is really what the Star Wars sagas are all about. But we who are the current light bearers, we who are the way showers, the initiates, the disciples of the masters of the Great White Lodge, we are committed to love and serve and reconcile differences and harmonize disparities and unify and draw others into harmonious cooperation. So the ideal is unity and diversity. We were never meant to have a one-way anything. We are not to have a one-world government. We are not to have a one-world religion, religious dogma or doctrine. We're not to have a one-world culture. How boring. We each have very different ways of expressing and seeing and experiencing life, and this needs to be recognized and correctly blended so there is a freedom of individuality and creative expression within the context of not harming one another in the process. Earth is designed to allow souls to experience different approaches to life and sample different levels of consciousness. And we can do that without inflicting our beliefs, religions, political ideologies, etc., on one another. We can do this without hating and warring and killing one another. It's a small planet. And to survive, we must share and cooperate with one another. How hard is that? It seems to be far easier than designing even more complex ways and means of destroying our planet and ourselves in the process. So the very beauty of Earth is its diversity. It's different cultures, it's different races and skin colors and lifestyles and creative forms of expression how beautiful all of this is. So we can tend to overlook the fact that we are reincarnations of souls who have lived in these ancient civilizations, who have pretty much at this point, 18.5 million years later, been there and done it all. So surely we are more aware and enlightened today than we've ever been before in the history of humanity. And that goes for the ancient avatars and masters we followed then as well. We're all much greater than we were in ancient times. So quit being so fascinated with who you were in the past life, which nobody really knows for certain, unless you're a fully enlightened master. And let's just get on with living today as self-aware as we possibly can evoke and manifest. So another cause for so many of the global conflicts today is where a group of individuals will try to impose an obsolete way of life upon people and nations today. There is no one way that's right. Not all nations need the same form of government. Not all nations will approach God in the same way. And just because it's what our ancestors believed and taught doesn't necessarily imply that that's a useful approach for today. We are meant to advance into the future, not retreat to the past. We need to sort these things out for ourselves rather than adopt and participate unconsciously in rituals and ceremonies and belief systems that have no significance or meaning whatsoever in our life and world today. So many people go on autopilot and they repeat the actions of the past. There's a story that Sai Baba tells, which is rather funny. Young man grew up in a household where the family, before they did their evening puja, would take a basket and put it over the family cat. And so the young man grew up and got married, and before he did his evening puja, he picked up the basket, put it over the family cat. And his wife asked him, "Why are you doing that?" And he said, "Because my father did that, and his father before him did that. And I don't know why I'm doing that, but they did that, so that's why I'm doing that." And that can be the story behind just about every unconscious practice that we do by rote. Let me ask you, have you experienced the fire of divine bliss? Ever? Are any of this nonsense? No, of course not, because there is none. Do you know what the meaning of the root meaning of the word culture is? It's the cult of Ur. Ur is the root of fire. Culture is supposed to evoke the fire of divine truth and presence within you. It's supposed to electrify you. It's supposed to burnish and burn away all of the nonsense dross, so that when we arise from communion with the divine, we're not the same person. But we walk in like a row of penguins into our church and sit in our pews and waddle out like a row of penguins And we're the same penguin. We're the same bird. Nothing has changed. When are we going to stop doing that? My friend told me the other day that the only reason people go to church is to talk about business so they can make more clients and have more money. I was astounded. I never thought of that in a million years. But I could see the truth of that. Why do we go to our church or a synagogue or a gurudwara or a temple or a mandir or whatever we go to, or a mosque? Why do we go there? Do we go there to activate the fire of the divine presence within our heart? Do we burn with love and longing for the beloved like Rumi did? Do you know how great Rumi is today? So why do we do these things? Well, we have practices to transcend the mind. Why do you think the Mevlani dervishes spin repeating the name of God? Because it allows them to step out of their body and transcend their lower egoic mind. They go beyond the thinking mind. Why do you think a dancer or a circus performer or someone that is truly great in their artistic expression goes into that zone? Because they have transcended the thinking lower mind, the ego, and they're in the state of divine expression where the soul is expressing through their instrument. And the result is a masterpiece of unforgettable beauty. That's why we chant and drum. There's a wonderful program on cable television called Global Spirit. And they had a segment on the other night on ecstasy. Not the drug, the real thing. But it shows there was an African woman who was an exponent of her African form of going into ecstasy. And there was Andrew Harvey, who was a Mevlani dervish and a great lover of Rumi. And they each were expressing the different ways that they and others can enter the ecstatic, blissful state of communion with the divine. And that's the purpose behind every chant, every singing, every meditation, every twirling, every ritual that we do, is to get over ourselves and out of our conditioning so that we can partake of something greater. We want to part the veils of our conditioning, our beliefs, our indoctrinations, our dogmas, our rituals. We want to part those veils and step into the unknown mystery. It said the only thing we can never get to the end of is God. So it's that journey in which we never arrive. And yet, in highest truth, we've never departed. In highest truth, we've never left the heart, the presence of God. We remain still as God created us in original innocence, purity, bliss, and peace. So how do you transcend yourself? Oh, I know some people take drugs, some people drink. That's not the way that leads you into one of the bardos of the astral realm. It's mood making. What about following another? That's like asking another to eat your meal for you and digest your food for you. I know people who have given over their entire spiritual life because someone said that they could do it for them. Big illusion. Never follow a teacher that says he or she will do it for you because they're liars. You alone have the key to your illumination. Because what dwells within you is that which is forever free, which is already illumined and enlightened, already saved, already liberated. But you have to unlock. You have to unlock that treasure chest by your own self-inquiry, by your own passionate hunger to know. And when that is so strong in you that nothing else matters, it will open. Because Sai Baba has said that when we take one step to God, God rushes 1,000 steps to us, but we have to take the first step. And that means thinking for yourself. That means deciding for yourself what's truth, what's so, what works for you. Very, very first sermon, lecture I ever gave was in my early 20s from my husband at that time's pulpit. He was a minister in the Church of Religious Science. And the topic I picked was, who does your thinking? And I remember I agonized over what I would say, and I wrote, oh gosh, I think maybe 25 pages of what I was going to say. Copying my husband, who used to do that. He'd write out everything, including his jokes. But just before I left to go to the church and deliver my sermon, I realized that if I filled my mind with all of those notes, I wouldn't be giving Spirit any room to speak what it wanted to say. And I was scared because it was my very first sermon. And it was my husband's church and congregation. So just before I went to leave, I took my notes and I threw them in the dresser drawer and I slammed the drawer and I ran out so I wouldn't change my mind. I jumped in my car and I got to the church and my husband was aghast that I would stand there without a Bible, without notes. But I did. And you know that feeling you get where you turn hot and cold, you have chills, you feel like you're going to faint? All of that hit me, which later I found out was the light coming in and anointing me. I wasn't familiar with it at that time. So the light came in and anointed me because it never will disappoint you when you fully rely on Spirit. It will never disappoint you. It will never embarrass you. It will never leave you with nothing to say. And I stood there as naked as I could possibly be in my spirit. And glory poured through this instrument. My mother in the first row was crying. And then I looked and I saw a majority of people in the congregation were weeping. And I started out with a scripture. I don't even remember which one it was now. But basically it said, the day is far spent, and the darkness is receding. It's time to put on the garment of light. And so I spoke about the indwelling glory, that is the authentic self, the soul, within each person. And how when you connect with that, it will guide you in every area of your life. Because it is a literal presence of the divine within you, acting through you as your highest nature. As your authentic self, as your creative brilliance. And so here, many decades later, I'm still giving that same message, more or less, in every seminar. Because that's the answer to everything. Jesus said that we must overcome evil with goodness. But then when someone called Jesus good, he said, "Why do you call me good? Only the Father is good." What was he referring to? The Spirit, the monad, the I am that I am presence within you, as your very highest God self. That is good. Down here, you know, in the human personality, it's meant to be flawed, because if there was perfection ever here in these lower dimensions, we'd never move. We'd never get beyond this world, which is basically one big fat matrix of dream stuff. One big labyrinth of confusion and thought forms. And projections, conditioned, momentums. So to be good, we have to get beyond the conditioning, beyond the beliefs, beyond the thought forms, beyond the projections, beyond the judgments we've made about all of that. And be at peace within our own beingness. We have to satisfy ourselves, fulfill ourselves, actualize our highest potential as best we can. But it's always going to be flawed here in these lower dimensions of time, space, and personal egoic static. It's meant to be. Fulfillment is not in the world. It's not in the body. It's not in success. It's not in possessions. It's not in money. It's not in acquisition. Fulfillment is contacting who you are and knowing that and allowing that to govern your decisions and your actions and your behavior. So what is needed right now in this world is education for the broadening of consciousness, for the expanding of a sense of tolerance and understanding. And we need education and human value. People have to understand that their lives matter, that their choices matter, that their human everyday, today, life matters. And that we're all here to contribute something that without our input would be lacking in the collective. No one has exactly the same state of consciousness, the same vibration of love, the same fingerprints, the same iris in the eyes. So many things are unique to every individual. And without you being you, we all are impoverished. But if one of you stands up in your full divinity, we're all standing up a little straighter, a little taller. The next thing we need is education and human values. And these values transcend all religious beliefs. They're universal and they're fivefold. And the five human values are truth, right action, peace, love, and nonviolence. So while we may not all agree on what God is or what spiritual approach is the best, we can all agree that truth, right action, peace, love, and nonviolence constitute the quintessential essence of divinity. and an authentic spiritual life. So, following that, we can have an education in right human relationships, where humaneness enters into the equation, and compassion, and cooperation, and sharing. So there's an equitable sharing of the Earth's resources, and not the hoarding by 82%, and the impoverishment of the rest of humanity. No, we have to have right human relations, which absolutely mandates sharing. And we need a literacy. Literacy is so important for global understanding, because people who can't read can easily be stirred into angry revolt by clever, persuasive, inflammatory speeches. And that's what's happened in many, many areas of the planet. We need free international access to the internet. This is so important, so that we can learn about each other's cultures and people and come to understand these different ways of life and how we can share this planet in harmony. We need to have understanding of our differences and, moreover, appreciation for our unique contributions as individuals and nations. Then we can truly co-create together a beautiful and abundant life for everyone. So as a global family, we can meet the needs of everyone. We can provide clean water and wholesome food and hygienic conditions and medical care and adequate shelter and education for all members of our global family. And until we do that, until we care and do that, we're going to have crime and evil. Because only people who have lost a sense of value because they've been marginalized or cast aside or indoctrinated or suppressed or conditioned into believing that they don't matter. Only such people become desperate enough and alienated enough to want to create pain and havoc and terrorize and harm others. And that's our situation today. If a personality is not hosted by the divine self, it becomes then an inn for the discarnate, discontented ones that will try to influence and, if possible, possess a personality that has opened themselves up to evil in some form. So then you have another problem, which the masters say is quite rampant today, and that is possession and obsession by negative entities. So if no one's home, you know, the thieves can enter. So you've got to occupy your life and make it beautiful. Let your life so reveal the presence of the beloved that people will need to have no other validation than God is real, because they'll see your life. They'll see the purity of the divine presence radiating from your heart and your glowing eyes and your joyful countenance, and your peaceful aura that you bring, like a breath from the high Himalayas. You move through society. And you're a true way shower. You're like the great stag in the story of Bambi. When the great stag entered the forest became hushed and still with awe. Our lives are meant to be awe-inspiring. And they can be if we take responsibility for our own fulfillment, our own self-realization, our own opening to that which is greater, our own courage to evoke and call it forward and embody it and diligently, relentlessly practice living it every day. And no matter how many times we fail and falter, get up and keep doing it again until there's nothing left in us. Divine love. That would be the end of evil. So I hope this has been helpful to you. Let's go out chanting. Let's do three Hue chants. H-U, Hue, ancient name for God, which also reflects your own divine essence as a vibration within you. Deep breath. You. You. God bless you, and may the peace and love of the Divine Spirit fill you from the top of your head to the bottom of your feet and spread around you in an aura of great beauty. Namaste.